From Tralee to the Blaskets, from Lixnaw to Kilgarvan, your voice in the kingdom, Radio Kerry.
The greatest day, the story of Kerry's 36 All-Ireland football titles. Brought to you in association with Kerry Group, proud sponsors of all inter-county GAA teams.
Episode 8 of The Greatest Day tells the tale of the 1929 season. The final that year saw the two John Joes come up trumps for the kingdom as the boys in green and gold took the first steps on their way to the county's first four in a row. Throughout this programme, we'll reproduce excerpts from the Kerryman newspaper of 1929. Gary O'Sullivan's is the voice you'll hear each time.
Part 1.
Sometimes before a team can rise to the greatest height attainable, they must fall further than ever before. That was the case for Kerry as the 1920s came to a close. In 27, the Kingdom lost out to Kildare at the final hurdle, 5-3. Then 28 saw the Kingdom, All-Ireland favourites, suffer a shock defeat to Tipperary in the Munster Championship. Legend has it that most Kerry supporters declined to take in the match against Tip as they were waiting for the final. Just weeks before the Tipperary debacle, Kerry had beaten reigning All-Ireland champions Kildare in the league final. That April win over Kildare itself occurred the month after Kerry had been suspended for 6 months, then reinstated, after walking off the field in a Railway Cup match following a dispute over a throw-in. With a turbulent 1928 put behind them, Kerry set to the task of regaining respect in Munster. This side was also aiming to become the first Kerry team to get their hands on the recently introduced Sam Maguire Cup. Just weeks prior to the provincial opener against Cork came the shock news that Austin Stack had died. A member of Kerry's first ever All-Ireland winning side of 1903, Stack was captain of the following season's victorious team. Off the field, he served as chairman of the county board, as well as being on the Munster and Central Councils. Other noteworthy events in 1929 included the Wall Street Stock Exchange crash, Eamon de Valera was sentenced to 1 month in prison for illegally entering Northern Ireland, the first Academy Awards, the Oscars, took place, mobster Al Capone and his men were responsible for the St. Valentine's Day massacre, and cartoon character the spinach-loving Popeye was created. Kerry's 1929 challenge opened away to Munster champions Cork on May 26th, and the Kerryman reporter was full of apprehension.
Kerry defeated them by a 6 points margin in Cork on April the 21st, but next Sunday's team is not nearly so strong as on that occasion, and the game cannot be faced with much confidence. Holders of the Munster title, Cork trained specially for the event.
The same correspondent bemoaned the ability of several of the Kerry players to last the hour in recent matches. Kerry went into the encounter minus Johnny Reardon, John Joe Sheehy and Jackie Ryan. They could still, however, call in seven of the team which downed Kildare in the 1926 final replay: Jack Walsh, Con Brosnan, Bob Stack, Paul Russell, James Bailey and team captain Joe Barrett. The seventh was Dennis Rory O'Connell. O'Connell was in goals against Cork. He had played midfield and half-forward when Kerry previously won the All-Ireland in 1926. With John Joe Sheehy missing against Cork, Paul Russell was played in the half-forward line. Kerry moved Bob Stack to the other wing, bringing Danjo Conway from Strand Street Tralee in at midfield. Also up front were Rock Street pair from Tralee, Eamon Sweeney and Jonjo Landers, better known as Peddler and Purty respectively. Jonjo attributes his nickname, given to him by a fellow Kerry footballer, to his appearance. Gradually, Pretty Boy became Purty.
That was such a good looking young lad. There was an old footballer there with us, living in the street, Rock Street, at him, Plug Everardy. Well, to see, he was the first man I heard he was catch a hold of me when I was young, you know. Going around, come here, my Purty boy, he said. And then the name stuck onto me.
West Kerry's John Stack, also of the Dublin Geraldines, wore the number 6 jersey against Cork, to be flanked by Rock Street duo Dan Ryan and Mick Healy. For all three, this would prove to be their only outing of the 1929 Championship. This game was also notable for the appearance of Dennis O'Connor Kilcommon, who was to be a mainstay of the Kerry defence that season. Those pre-match fears about Kerry's inability to cope with Cork seemed well-founded early on.
The start was sensational, as Cork, coming away in a great burst, with a slight wind in their favour, netted inside a minute. O'Donnell had cleared in the Kerry goal, and the ball went into touch. Maher secured from the throw, and a hard low shot went through a cluster of players into the Kerry net amid wild applause from the home followers.
Cork then tagged on a point. Kerry responded and were on level terms before too long.
Landers was fouled in possession and Russell missed on a close range free. Kerry broke through again and a hard shot by Bailey was saved by Brennan in the Cork goal. Barrett centred, but the leather was returned and Barrett again securing, punted just wide of the net. A great ball from Brosnan was saved by Vaughan. Russell broke away, he passed to Launders, who just missed the net. Kerry pressed and Bob Stack opened the scoring with a point. Healy brought along the wind and transferred to Landers. A fast shot entered the net for the equalising score.
Kerry pressed, but could not make their pressure count.
Barrett's kick is secured by Locke. Brennan, in the Cork goal, brought off a wonderful save. Cork broke away, and Regan, from a free in a nice position, gave the home team the lead with a point. Kerry worked to the other end, and Locke tried to net, the Cork backs giving a 50. Kerry got possession from a throw. Conway and later Locke hit the crossbar. The Kerrymen were swarming around the post when Russell sent wide. Brosnan sent a great kick across the sticks, but Hurley saved. A free to Cork was sent inches wide. A vigorous half hour ended. Cork were worth more scores.
The half ended with Cork ahead by 1-2 to 1-1. Despite Kerry passing up numerous goal chances, it was felt the margin of Cork's lead should have been bigger.
Cork had somewhat the better of the play in the opening half and should have led by more than a point at the interval. Their forwards missed many chances of scoring, and with one good sharpshooter in the Cork vanguard, there might be a different story to tell.
Early in the second period, Cork fluffed further attempts to add to their tally. Kerry would make them pay dearly.
Kerry walked in, but the Cork backs speedily cleared, and moving to the attack, Murphy missed a great chance of adding to the home team's score. The same player missed another certain score soon after. Cork pressed for Barrett to save. A scrum in the Kerry square forced the backs to give a 50. Wides by Cork were a feature at this stage. From the goal kick, Bob Stack received, and a dashing movement by the Kerrymen with Launders, Russell and Locke in the van changed play. Kerry got a free at an angle about 30 yards out, and Locke sent in a great kick, the ball bounding through off the far upright for a Kerry minor. The scores were now level. Russell returned the kick and Sweeney sent wide, close in. Kerry attacked again, John Stack landing a long kick on the crossbar, the leather going over for a point after 15 minutes play. Cork attacked with fury, right up to the Kerry goal they came. Donnell punted out from under bar and then Connor cleared a dangerous situation. Kerry came away along the wing. Launders crashed towards the Cork net, Brennan saving on the line. Kerry still pressed, and Russell, eluding two opponents, put over the bar for a further point. A Cork movement was stopped by Connor, and Locke secured far out on the wing. A great ball went through for a further point for Kerry. Kerry, moving in, forced to 50. Barrett sent in with great accuracy, and Stack boxed high above the bar for a minor. Kerry were now in their element, and a clever pass by Conway to Locke ended in a point. After Russell hit the crossbar, Cork came away. A free made Cork dangerous, and from a tussle in front of the Kerry sticks, the ball went over for a point. Connor and Barrett cleared vigorous Cork attacks. The end of a very even and vigorous game came.
Kerry restricted Cork to a single point in that second half, scoring six of their own in the process. The Kingdom progressed in a scoreline of 1-7 to 1-3.
It was a vigorous game all through, bordering on roughness. Fouls were numerous and the referee did not make sufficient use of the whistle. Cork gave a surprisingly good display, and except for the Tipperary game last year, the Kerry team has not been so severely tested for the past decade. There was very little hand passing, and Cork employed spoiling methods, which, if not allowed by the rules, were very effective and threw the Kerrymen off their game. After about 15 minutes in the second half, Kerry had levelled the scores. Kerry soon went ahead with minors. They hit the Cork crossbar twice and missed other chances at close range. There were some exciting tussles under the Kerry crossbar, and on one occasion, slowness by the Cork full forward lost a certain goal. Kerry did not play up to the All-Ireland standard, and on Sunday's form would not survive in the semi-finals. Strict training will be necessary if our men hope to bring a further title to the Kingdom. As only four senior teams competed in this year's Senior Munster Football Championships, Sunday's opening ties were in fact semi-finals. Clare accounted for a weakened Tipperary team. Two other counties have been graded junior.
For the win over Cork, Kerry wore mourning armlets as a mark of respect to the late PJ O'Connell, County Board Chairman. Clare were all that now stood in Kerry's way of the Munster title. The Irish Times did not hold out much hope of an upset.
Kerry have Clare as visitors to Killarney in the Munster final. West Clare shelters some very fine players who had a surprise victory in defeating Tipperary in the early ties. I do not think that they can hold Kerry, who are playing with great verve this year, and met their stoutest opposition from Cork in the initial tie. North Kerry supplies the bulk of the team, and O'Connor may be the only man from the eastern section, which was strong in the days of Con Murphy and Healy. Football has reached a high standard in the local leagues around Tralee. With John Joe Sheehy back on the team, Kerry should win tomorrow and open the way to another All-Ireland final, where they may again meet Kildare.
John Joe Sheehy was a welcome addition. Kerry were further strengthened by the return of goalkeeper Johnny Reardon and half-forward Jackie Ryan. Mike O'Doyle claimed a starting spot at full forward against Clare. West Kerry's Joe O'Sullivan was brought in at centre-back and Pod O'Sullivan from North Kerry alongside him. Bob Stack reverted to his more familiar role at midfield, with Danjo Conway losing out. James Bailey was another to be dropped.
Owing to a family bereavement, Bailey was off and was replaced by Doyle.
Kerry were relentless in that first period against Clare, a team on a mission.
Doyle passed to Sweeney, the white flag going up. Stack next sent in and Sweeney just missed. Kerry were having the better of the argument and a fine drive by Sheehy was cleared by Considine. A pass by Sheehy close into Sweeney saw the latter try for goal, but Fitzpatrick saved in great style. Stack sent in from midfield. Ryan fielding and sending into the goal mouth. Doyle secured and hits the upright. Studdard clearing the rebound. A free to Kerry put the Clare post in danger and Sweeney sent over the bar with a nice overhead kick. Russell showed up well in wing play and his long kick was held by Locke, who drove over a further point. Many wides to Kerry was the order until Ryan scored neat point from the corner. Russell again put Kerry moving and Fitzpatrick saved under the bar. A close range free to Kerry enabled Sheehy to notch a minor. Kerry kept bombarding, on the lookout for goals, but Fitzpatrick cleared time and again. A centre from Locke was fielded by Sweeney to score a further point. Locke secured from a touch and sent into the square. Sheehy's shot at the goal was blocked. A centre by Brosnan was held by Ryan and the white flag went up again. Russell sent in a great drive, which Studdard saved. A 50 to Kerry was centred by Barrett and Locke sent over the bar. A goal was punched in by Doyle, but this was disallowed. Ryan scored just before the interval.
It was game over at the break. Kerry ahead 10 points to nil. The second half was a mere formality.
Clare, playing with the wind, showed to better advantage in this half. They could make no impression, however, on the Kerry backs. Barrett and O'Connor checking every dangerous movement. Doyle, Landers, Sheehy and Clifford added points for Kerry, and near the end Clifford added a good goal. The issue was practically decided when Moclair scored a goal for Clare. Kerry goalkeeper was only called upon once, and the final was one of the most one-sided on record. Kerry were superior in all departments and won by an overwhelming margin. Kerry won from Clare in most decisive fashion. Any ordinary club team in this county could have done likewise. Clare gave a most inglorious exhibition and it was a sorry provincial final.
It would be hard to find fault following a display like that by Kerry. Hard, but not impossible.
Though Kerry did what was required of them in convincing style, it was evident that the form of the team leaves much to be desired. The form of some of the Kerry players left room for improvement. It is safe to say that half of the Kerry team are completely off colour. Speed, stamina and dash were missing. The team was not so convincing as against Cork recently. Judgment was faulty and forward shooting was erratic. With the exception of Kerry, the other counties seemed to have concentrated almost entirely on hurling. The quality of Munster football, therefore, leaves much to be desired. The opposition to our men was so weak that Kerry's achievement is nothing to enthuse over. Many Dublin Gaels were present at the match. The general opinion amongst them was that the Kerry team has gone off, that Sunday's form is not good enough to qualify for the All-Ireland, let alone winning out the supreme title. Kerry's play did not reach All-Ireland standard, and the team will need vigorous training for the semi-final. Kerry have been top-notchers or thereabouts for the past 6 years. Looking up the records, 6 continuous years have been the limit of any team basking in the All-Ireland sunshine. There are portents that our team has seen its best days, which is only natural. So this year's championship may be our last for some years again. One final effort, therefore, should be made.
The greatest day. The story of Kerry's 36 All-Ireland football titles. Brought to you in association with Kerry Group. Proud sponsors of all inter-county GAA teams. Part 2.
A 114-2 success over Clare meant an All-Ireland semi-final with Mayo. Prior to that fixture, Kildare visited Tralee to play Kerry in a challenge match. The match was a fundraiser in aid of the Rock Street Club. The previous April, Kildare had travelled to Tralee for the same reason, but the untimely passing of Austin Stack led to the challenge game being postponed. When Kildare and Kerry reconvened, Kerry won. The Kerry man explained that, with the potential All-Ireland final clash between the same counties in the offing, the match was used to try out new players and both sides kept their cards close to their chests. Kerry received a hesitant vote of confidence to overcome Mayo in the semi-final.
Kerry have mustered an excellent 15 and should win. About 5 of the Kerry players are sadly in need of training.
The Kingdom welcomed Tim O'Donnell of West Kerry, Boherby's Michael O'Rourke into the team for the semi-final. Pod O'Sullivan of Newtown Sands and Sammy Locke from Strand Street were the ones to make way. Jackie Ryan was moved to full forward for the tie, with Mike O'Doyle now on the 40. Eamon Sweeney joined him in the half-forward line, while Jonjo Sheehy moved to the corner. The meeting with Mayo was the first ever All-Ireland semi-final to be played in Roscommon. Kerry were treated like royalty.
The Kerry team arrived in Roscommon at 10:30 p.m. on Saturday outside the railway station. A torchlight procession had been prepared and headed by the local band. The team were escorted to Murray's Hotel, where the Roscommon council chairman read an address of welcome to the Kerry team. On Sunday evening, a splendid banquet was held in the town hall, and subsequently a dance in the courthouse.
Having been treated like royalty before and after the game, Kerry played like kings for the 60 minutes of the match. They simply crushed Mayo.
Kerry were forced to take the field and were warmly welcomed. But when Mayo came out, it was evident from the ovation they received that their Connacht supporters had high hopes of victory. Clever combination by Sweeney, Rourke, Doyle and Sheehy was seen, but to no advantage on the score sheet. Kerry were now persistently attacking and Ryan opened the scoring with a point. Immediately after, Doyle sent in a ball which caught McLaughlin off his guard and the Mayo net fell. Brosnan returned the kick and Sheehy's low drive struck the upright. Sheehy got possession and gave to Rourke, who narrowly missed. Russell came away on the wing and drove down to Ryan, who put over a neat kick. Stack fielded and returned. Cray fouled Sweeney. Russell kicked a minor. Doyle now had a chance, but his effort went wide. Ryan, Doyle and Russell wide in turn. Mayo at last made headway, and Patton received on the right wing and racing in to a good scoring position, put over a point for Mayo.
Kerry's half-time advantage stood at 1 goal and 3 points to a point. As the second half progressed, Kerry's advantage grew bigger.
On resuming, Sheehy and Ryan combined well, but their efforts were frustrated. Mayo came again, and from a ruck in the goal mouth, the ball entered the Kerry net. The goal was no fault of the goalies. A deafening cheer went up, and great excitement now prevailed. Both sides were now finding hard. Kerry to retain and improve their slender lead, and Mayo to reduce it. But Kerry lived up to its best football tradition. O'Donnell sent across to Sweeney, who sent on to Ryan, from whose centre Sheehy notched a further minor. Mayo worked down, but Barrett raced out to meet a rolling ball and sent well into Mayo territory. Brosnan sent down to Ryan, and in a twinkling, Sheehy was in possession and drove through a great goal. Kerry had matters now to themselves. Sheehy sent wide, but immediately scored a point when well placed by Ryan. Mayo had a free, and Patton burst through and shot at close range. But Reardon brought off a fine save and turned what looked like a certain goal into a 50. Kerry again took command for Rourke to send over the bar. But the whistle had gone for a Kerry free, from which Sheehy raised the white flag. Rourke goaled and Doyle scored a point before the final whistle came.
An emphatic 3-8-1-1 victory was Kerry's, which left the Irish Times somewhat surprised.
It was generally anticipated that Kerry would beat Mayo, but few thought it was going to be by so large a margin. Somehow the Connacht men seemed to fall away after the opening of the second half. Sheehy and Russell were outstanding players on the winning side.
The Kerry forwards in particular were singled out for their efforts.
Sheehy, Ryan and Rourke were a formidable front line, the latter being called on to fill the place of Jim Bailey, who was unable to travel. Joe Sullivan was the star of a sound defence. O'Donnell, who had possibly the pick of the Mayo forward line to contend with, did as much as was expected of him, and his lengthy drives brought great relief. Brosnan and Stack were great at midfield, where they had to cope with the strongest line of the Mayo team. The game was strenuous, but not brilliant, except for a few brief passages in either period. Kerry showed a vast improvement on their form against Kildare on the previous Sunday.
Kerry's win meant an All-Ireland final meeting with back-to-back champions Kildare. The Leinster champions had accounted for Monaghan in the last four by 9 points to 1. Kildare had beaten Cavan in the previous year's final and taken care of Kerry in the 1927 decider. In 1926, it was Kerry who had defeated Kildare in the final. Thus, this was Kildare's fourth final in a row, and it was felt this may be a Kildare team on a downward spiral.
Kerry is easily the more youthful combination. We have only two men who have just topped the 30 mark. Kildare have half a dozen who turned that age some years back. Youth will be served.
It was fancied that Kerry's attacking prowess would prevail, but there were also words of warning.
As usual, a Kildare man will break the dropping balls and then hand pass to an opponent. They will leave the Kerrymen rise for the ball and endeavour to rob them on alighting. Close marking and keen tackling by Kerry will upset Kildare's hand passing and put the all-white machine out of gear. Kildare are adepts at smothering an opponent's kick, and unless there is a lightning delivery, Kildare will block the leather. The Kingdom attack is the more incisive. Our frontliners are composed of deadly accurate kickers to a man. Four come from Rock Street Club and two from Boherbuy. They understand each other's methods to a fraction. When play waxes hottest, the Kerry men will be in their element. Their great dash and determination, which have ever characterised their county, will sweep the Kingdom to victory. Kerry should be about three in front when the last whistle sounds.
The Kingdom was reported to be agog with excitement in the build-up to the final.
From the uttermost confines of the county, the fans began to collect in Tralee early on Saturday. They came from the extreme end of the Dingle Peninsula and Iveragh, far along the Shannon and the Rowty. Young and old they came, boys and girls, to cheer the Kingdom to victory. The first contingent to the number of 1,000 left Kerry on Saturday evening. Four further specials left on Sunday morning. Huge crowds travelled likewise from Limerick, Cork and Clare, all wearing the Kingdom's green and gold. Half an hour before the big game started, all attendance records were broken and the gates locked.
In his book, Kerry's Football Story, Paddy Foley told how
the magnetic appeal which Kerry and Kildare have ever made to football fans was early in evidence. The railway company arranged for the most extensive service in their history. A huge crowd left Kerry by the evening train, ex-Tralee on Saturday, and from all parts of the country, huge throngs arrived in Dublin on Sunday. Beautiful weather, except for once at Cork, always favoured Kerry-Kildare matches. Conditions in this instance were well nigh perfect. It was no surprise when the official attendance was announced as 43,839 and the gate £4,010, both figures easily eclipsing previous records. The gates had to be closed before the match started.
This is documented as being the first 40,000 plus attendance at a GAA match. The sizeable and noisy presence from the Kingdom made themselves known pre-throw-in.
The all-white champions were first to appear on the pitch, but the cheering was surpassed in intensity and volume as the green and gold jerseys gradually filed out.
For this decider, Kerry included James Bailey at full forward. Michael O'Rourke, who had deputised in the semi-final, had to make do with being amongst the subs. As the Irish Times detailed, early honours went to the Leinster champions.
Kildare opened at a great pace before Kerry's backs had settled down. Malone's free reached Joe Loughlin, and a pretty movement by Kildare ended in Doyle turning clear and kicking the opening point across. From a fast pass by P. Loughlin, Doyle secured and kicked the second score across for Kildare.
Hard to believe, but Kildare did not register another score until the second half. In the intervening period, the Kingdom took over.
Kerry dashed away with the kick out. Sheehy held the ball and steadied himself. A grand left punt sailed over the bar for Kerry's opening minor. The cheers had scarcely died down when Kerry came again. Doyle sent to Sweeney, who centred. Sheehy again got the ball near the corner. He rounded Fitzpatrick and drove straight and through between the sticks for the equaliser. The Kerrymen played with bewildering dash. Ryan got the kick out. He passed to Sweeney, who put the Kingdom ahead after 10 minutes play. Sheehy got possession from a free, but was again fouled close in. John Joe took the kick and made the score 4-2 in favour of Kerry. Kerry pressed to the attack. Sweeney was fouled and Sheehy added a further point from the free.
Then came that all-important goal.
Sullivan stopped Kildare and Kerry burst upfield. Ryan had a free, which bounded off Bailey's hands across to Sweeney. Sweeney lashed at the ball and a grand oblique shot hit the far upright and slithered through for a goal. The first to pass Riley in this year's championship. Scenes of the wildest enthusiasm followed.
Kerry took a commanding 1-5 to 2 points lead into the second period. The Kingdom may have expected an easier ride in those remaining 30 minutes. Kildare, though, produced the kind of comeback that's associated with champions.
With the sun and slight wind in their favour, it was generally expected Kerry would win by a huge score. Kildare broke away along the wing. Doyle passed across to Martin. Martin's drop about 30 yards out went straight to the net and bounded through off Reardon's fingers for the major score. Kerry fouled about 40 yards out. Doyle took the free and drove straight for the Kerry net. Connor got the ball under the bar and with the Kildare forwards charging him, threw himself and the ball wide of the upright for a 50. It was a wonderful clearance. A free to Kerry brought great relief. The leather reached Brosnan, who punted into Kildare ground. Sheehy dashed past Fitzpatrick and sent over the bar for a further Kerry point. Kildare responded in gallant style. They got a free around midfield. Higgins drove up to Paul Doyle and a grand left punt reduced the Kerry lead to a goal. Malone, Higgins, Glocklin and Doyle flung the leather rugby fashion to each other. As usual, Doyle was left in possession close in. With deadly accuracy, he sent in a further point. Kerry's lead was now 2 points, and while the Kingdom appeared to tire, Kildare were playing with wonderful speed. At about 30 yards out, Paul Doyle took the kick, and the white flag went up.
At this stage in proceedings, Kerry's advantage stood at the minimum. The Kingdom had added a solitary point to their half-time total. Kildare, in the meantime, had registered 1 goal and 3 points. It meant, with 10 minutes left, the score read 1-6 for Kerry, Kildare 1-5. The Kingdom had the final say.
For Kildare, Pringle had a great chance in a nice position. His long high kick lost the equalising score by a yard. Kerry roused themselves. A headlong rush upfield left Sheehy in possession. He passed over to Launders, who sent home a further point. Kerry drove back to the kick-out. Sheehy sprinted in and crashed over the bar for a great point.
The two John Joes had come up trumps. Those late points by Landers and Sheehy secured the win, Kerry coming good on a scoreline of 1-8 to 1-5.
The greatest day. The story of Kerry's 36 All-Ireland football titles. Brought to you in association with Kerry Group. Proud sponsors of all inter-county GAA teams. Part 3.
The Kerryman newspaper was right on the button with its prediction of a 3-point success for the Kingdom.
There have been more thrilling finals, but few have ever been fought with greater keenness and determination. For 20 minutes, attack after attack was hurled by the All-Whites, but there was no breaking down the Kerry ramparts. The Green and Gold boys took control in the last 10 minutes. The most brilliant football feats were performed by Russell in the first half. Sullivan's play on the concluding half was amazing. Sheehy's shooting won the day for Kerry.
The Irish Times was also crediting John Joe Sheehy for getting the Kingdom over the finish line.
Following their fine football in the first half, Kerry played very poorly in the second session, during which Kildare played their best football against a weakened Kerry team. The challengers came again when Sheehy staged a fine finish to kick 2 points home and decide the issue. This final can be divided into 4 sessions, unequal on time. First we watched Kildare's readiness in attack. Then came Kerry's sterling work against wind and sun, which culminating in Sweeney's goal gave them a formidable lead. When Kildare were set to face Sun and Wind in the second half, their position seemed hopeless, with a lead of 8 points to 2 against them. Champion teams die hard, and Kildare played the best game of their brilliant career. Recovering their best form, the All Whites proceeded to play very assertive football. Every score was well earned, and the champions pegged Kerry back. Score after score came, and Martin's goal was the best of the hour. Then Kerry found a new life when scores were all but level, and Sheehy's aggressive tactics paved the way for a Kerry championship.
The Independent believed play reached a high standard without being brilliant, adding that Kerry deserved their victory.
Expectations of a keen and closely contest were fully realised at Croke Park when Kerry beat Kildare by a 3 points margin. Without being brilliant, the play for the greater part reached a high standard, but there was the usual contrast of styles. Kerry played with a greater vigour and determination, while Kildare adapted themselves to more polished methods, but only on a couple of occasions did their hand-passing tactics lead to any advantage. For a long time it looked, indeed, as if the game were to end in a draw. But, strive as they might, Kildare were held in check, and Kerry, who finished best, had 2 points in quick succession in the closing minutes. It was nearing the long whistle before the verdict was put beyond doubt, and about midway through the second half hour, the Kerry supporters were having an anxious time. On the whole, however, Kerry deserved their victory, which gives them 3 out of 5 finals in which they have been pitted against Kildare.
1945 book, Kerry's Football Story by Paddy Foley, included match verdicts from a number of other outlets. The Enniscorthy Echo.
Kerry's victory in the All-Ireland final signalises the triumph of the Goyal, and Wexfordians will take off their hats to the men of the kingdom, rivals in past years, in many a hard-fought game. In congratulating the victors, one cannot but admire Kildare, who went down with colours flying, and though beaten by a better side, were shares in the credit for a final that will be memorable.
The Drogheda Argus.
Kerry played with their characteristic dash, and the Kerry followers seemed to take victory as a matter of course. They cheered themselves hoarse for every score made by their favourites.
The Leinster Leader.
The game was an exciting one, particularly in the early stages of the second half, when Kildare staged a spectacular comeback. Riley in goal proved as efficient as ever, and it was hard luck that his record for the season of a non-penetrated goal was broken. The present champions deserved their victory, and the Kildare Goyals will not withhold their congratulations to successful rivals. But we do not admit a Kerry superiority in the Gaelic games, and we look ahead to the day when the wiping out of the present defeat shall so prove us right.
On Fublocht.
Last Sunday's game, viewed now from a little distance, was a truly captivating display. It was a test for men on an issue which surpassed that of any other competition in Ireland. Football is our popular game.
The Star.
It was very fast, very clean, and very exciting. Kerry's winning margin of 3 points does not flatter them. They were more than 3 points better than Kildare. To me, the feature of the game was the playing of Sheehy and Barrett for Kerry and Paul Doyle for Kildare.
PF also detailed how
Sir James Melville, English Solicitor General, a native of Sneem, in an address at Gateshead, when elected president of the Tyneside Irish Fellowship, said one of the proudest moments of his life was when in Croke Park he saw his own Kerry beat Kildare in the football championship.
The All-Ireland winners returned home on Monday. The welcome home was fitting for the Sam Maguire holders.
The victorious Kerry team had a royal reception in the kingdom last evening. Bonfires blazed from the first outpost of Rathmore and at various points to Tralee. At Killarney Station, the Dr. Crokes Club had organised a reception. The Piper's Band and a huge crowd had assembled, and scenes of wildest excitement prevailed when the train arrived. In response to repeated calls, Joe Barrett appeared at the carriage window with the coveted cup, which he said they had hoped to hold for more than another final. At Tralee Station, a large and enthusiastic crowd assembled, accompanied by St. Joseph's Brass Band and Strand Street Fife and Drum Band. The Sam Maguire Perpetual Challenge Cup, value £150, which comes to the kingdom for the first time, was borne aloft amidst great jubilation through Edward Street and Castle Street, and thence to the Central Hotel, where the bands in turn discoused appropriate selections. Afterwards, the cup was again carried in triumph through the Mall, Bridge Street, Russell Street, and thence to Rock Street, to the home of the Kerry captain, outside of which the bands again played. Cheers were raised and the names of the individual players were greeted with loud and prolonged applause.
The Kerryman newspaper ran a Guess the Score competition for the 1929 All-Ireland final. Seven readers correctly predicted 1-8 to 1-5 and each was rewarded with half a guinea. The paper noted how one North Kerry lady's entry read, "Kerry a draw, Kildare a draw." The 15 responsible for bringing the Sam Maguire to the kingdom for the first time were John Reardon Borby.
Has guarded the kingdom net since 1926, a very reliable custodian.
Joe Barrett, Rock Street.
The Kerry captain is considered the greatest centre fullback in Ireland. A great fielder of powerful kicker, played at that position since 1923.
Jack Walsh, Craw-Darrig.
A fine fielder and clever defender.
Dennis O'Connor, Kilcommon.
Came on in the senior ranks in 1927. A sturdy, powerful kicker in great form just now.
Paul Russell, Killarney.
A most scientific footballer whose lengthy drops are a feature of his play, also a fast sprinter.
Joe Sullivan, Dingle.
Selected in 26, had to stand down through being technically illegal. A great high fielder and strong kicker.
Tim O'Donnell, Camp.
Just out of his teens, a good high jumper, lengthy kicker and great fielder, has come rapidly into prominence.
Con Brosnan, Newtown Sands.
Ireland's greatest midfield man, a fast, stylish footballer whose accurate shooting has raised many flags for the kingdom.
Bob Stack, Doon Ballybunion.
Has partnered Brosnan since 24, a glutton for work, always in the thick of the fray, plays with great understanding with Con.
Mike O'Doyle, Rock Street.
Played a great game against Louth in the 28 junior final. Great hands and deadly accurate.
Jack Ryan, Borby.
Kerry's brilliant right winger, who has filled this berth since 23. A great stylish footballer and accurate at long range. One of the classiest footballers Kerry has produced.
John Joe Landers, Rock Street.
A fast, brilliant footballer, nippy and very accurate with either foot.
John Joe Sheehy, Borby.
Kerry's most prolific scorer, a brainy player who is dangerous to any backs.
Edward Sweeney, Rock Street.
Very fast and nippy. His form during the past year has entitled him to a place in the Kerry 15.
James Bailey, Ballymac.
His best game has been against Kildare. A great fighter, his agility makes up for his lack of inches.
James Bailey was winning his third All-Ireland medal that year. He had won his first alongside his brother Johnny in 1924. The contribution of another brother, Dennis, was just as significant, maybe even greater. Dennis, or Denjo, as he was known in GAA circles, served the county for over 30 years. He firstly became secretary and then progressed to chairman. He's widely regarded as the man who held peace in Kerry GAA circles at a time when the Civil War and its fallout meant the association was at its most fragile in the kingdom. On a lighter note, every team has its characters, and this Kerry outfit was no different. Kingdom forward John Joe Landers remembers the entertaining yet controversial antics of netminder Johnny Reardon.
Reardon was warned, in, as far as I can remember, he was warned a few times, even by the Secretary of the Central Council. He could twist his body anywhere, Reardon, and his two hands were underneath him, and his knees were out there, and he waddling to and from across the goals. And the crowd were gathered, this was before the match, of course. Yes. The crowd was gathered at that time to go around Reardon. And Paddy O'Keefe went over, and Paddy, the Secretary of the Central Council, he couldn't fathom Reardon at all. Everybody liked poor Reardon. And he would often see in the middle of a match, half time, and you would see him above, and he waddling. And his, however he used to, his two hands and his legs would be out in front of him. And he loved the attention too he got from the crowd.
The coin was spun against wind and sun, the Kerry men were faced. I wonder if two greater teams have ever Croke Park graced. When Bishop Cullen off Kildare, the ball between them threw. That slogan cry rang out and high, "Come on Kildare, aboo!" And come they did, for good old Payne in scoring vain was there. And twice he sent the white flag up, first honours for Kildare. But Barrett's men got moving then, and to our great delight, the evergreen John Joe three times sent up the flag of white. Jack Reardon grand with brilliant hands, the gap of damper filled. His many saves throughout the game, the hearts of Kerry thrilled. Croke Darragh Jack at left full back shone like an Aladdin lamp. An honest heir with dash and fire, O'Donnell was from camp. Payne Russell Fine held safe his line when danger threatened there, and worthy shoulders Russell's are Tom Rice's cloak to wear. For though the long and heir of our, wherever Doyle would roam, the star was always clouded by the boy from Canty's home. O'Connor Dan, the clear air man, the strongest of the gale, his many fights and glorious feats made rosy cheeks grow pale. And Captain Joe, the stone well back, the kingdom's hope and pride, each time the white wave against us dashed, he stemmed the rushing tide. And when the fight was fiercest in the ground and in the air, of high renown from Dingle Town, Joe Sullivan was there. And Con, the greatest of his day, at midfield held his own. Or idle Grant from Newtown Sands, great guns were always going. Bob Stack, a rare old fighter in defence and in attack, was ever in the limelight there. He never once looked back. He's fielding fine and placing well to Higgins' men brought ruin. His dash and pluck shed lustre on the bonny cliffs of Doon. And John Joe Sanders on the wing proved equal to the test. For though the fray and in the play, his record beat the jest. While down around the 40 yards we saw some battles royal between the skipper Higgins and the Kerry marksman Doyle. And over on Kerry's right shone Jackie Ryan of old, the same old Jack of many a fight in Kerry's green and gold. And Flying Sweeney tearing in a march on Riley Stowe, the earth around us trembled when Pedlar scored the goal. Though last not least comes Bailey Jim, the boy from Ballymac, who showed his old-time dash and vine against a powerful back. But never selfish for the ball, his passing to John Joe sent up the white flag more than once against an eager foe. With Higgins' score ascending fast and Barrett's coming down, the lily-white saw visions bright of this found triple crown. Ah, yes, that golden triple crown above the champion's lung. Kilpeerless Sheehy scored again, and then to victory clung. Good luck to you, the tried and true, or idols of the day. A gallant team, you stand supreme and matchless in the fray. 'Twas over on the Kerry hills, the blazing fires were seen, to welcome home the champions in their colours, gold and green.
You've been listening to The Greatest Day, a 36-part series documenting the story of Kerry's All-Ireland Senior Football Championship victories. The Greatest Day was presented by John Drummy, written by Joe O'Mahony, and researched and produced by the Radio Kerry Sports team. This programme was made with the support of the Broadcasting Authority of Ireland Sound and Vision Scheme.
The Greatest Day, the story of Kerry's 36 All-Ireland football titles, brought to you in association with Kerry Group, proud sponsors of all inter-county GAA teams.